So Naomi, hello. How are you doing? How are you feeling? I think have you just finished a film as we speak?
Yes, I finished a film on Saturday and just arrived in Paris.
Oh my goodness. So you're probably still getting back to normal life. But I'm going to start then with a very easy question. You know,
Okay.
how did you become a cinematographer? What's been your path to this role?
So it's not a really easy path to explain, but I'll try to be quick. I actually always wanted to tell stories, but because I didn't know anyone who was in the film industry, I had no idea what a cinematographer who was and didn't even know what job existed. At first I thought films were just actors. I had no idea how they were recorded. And so th the first thing that I wanted to do was acting, because I thought that's how you could tell a story. And so when I was in school, I always joined the drama classes. And I had a teacher in high school who told me, oh, you know what you should do? You should try to be an extra on movie sets, because that way you can really see what's happening and it's not very stressful and you don't need to have a lot of experience. And so I convinced my parents, because I was living in the countryside, and I convinced my dad to drive me to sets. And I was like pretending that I was sick, and my dad would drive me to Paris to be on a film set.
Oh my God, how far away was that?
I was 3 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and so I did that a couple times, and every time I was so excited because I was discovering so much about filmmaking, even if most of the time I was just standing there and they wouldn't use me at all, but I had the full costume and makeup and I was just so excited. And one time I applied to be an extra on a film whose is called Once in a Lifetime and directed by Marie-Cassie Mansonchard. And I guess something in my pictures was like a character they were looking for, and so they had me come over for an interview. And I thought, oh, they want to meet me to be an extra. Okay, that's weird, but I went with it. And then they told me, oh, we would like to offer you a part in the film. And it was a very small part because the film was about a classroom and students in the classroom. So I didn't have a lot to do, but I had a lot of time on set. So I stayed 2 months on the set,
Wow.
sitting in the classroom and watching people around me make a film. And I met the director, and I met the director of photography, Myriam Vinocourt, who happened to be a woman. And because the first cinematographer that I ever saw was a woman, I didn't, for me, it didn't occur that maybe that was a job that not a lot of women did, because she was a woman and she was doing it. So it seemed possible. And she was so nice and so supportive. And she had me hold the camera and explain to me what her job was. And after this film, I knew that that was what I wanted to study. And so I finished high school and then went to film school and continued acting for a little bit. But I always knew in the back of my head that I wanted to pursue cinematography, and the more I got into it, the more I loved cinematography and the less I loved acting. And so the transition really went very smoothly, and now I absolutely don't want to go back to acting because I love cinematography so much.
That is amazing. I mean, I don't know what the statistics are like in France, but I know in sort of the UK and US, I mean, the number of female cinematographers is under 10%. It's very, very low. I mean, is that the case in France as well, or have you got a slightly more, equitable system there?
No, I think it's the same.
Wow.
And I'm very grateful that I wanted to do this job at a time where a lot of women were already doing it, because I never felt that that was impossible. And I wonder how they felt when they were starting out and there was no role model for them. And I never felt, well, I remember that in film school, we were three female students in my class out of 16. So it's not much, but still, I wasn't the only one. But the two others, now they're directors. So I'm the only one who kept doing cinematography. But yeah, I remember, I think in year two or three, one of us said, oh, it's so interesting how we never had a female cinematographer who was invited to talk about her work. Every time we had a cinematographer come in, he was a man. And when we had camera assistants coming in, they were women. And so my friend said that, and she was surprised that, you know, all the DPs were men and the assistants were female. And I think that's the first time that I really realized that something was a bit wrong. But then I never felt like someone didn't want to hire me because I was a woman. I never felt like that. It's more because I'm young that I feel that sometimes people are not willing to trust me very easily. But being a woman, no. I think ultimately it had only helped me, because some people are like, oh, we want to hire more females in the team. So, but sometimes people call me and they say, oh, we're looking for a female cinematographer. That's why we're asking you. And on one hand, I'm happy that they're asking me. And on the other one, I'm frustrated because I know it's not really for my work, but it's because they couldn't find another woman cinematographer. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's the eternal dilemma, I think. You feel it when that happens. But at the same time, like it is a genuine thing that, you know, the opportunities in the past have not been there, you know, and you're, I guess, standing up and showing that there are women who are ready and able and have the talent and have the training and have the experience to do the job. And you have worked your way up. Like, to be clear, you have done the camera assistant jobs and the, you know, the electrician jobs and things like that, right? You've kind of come your way up through the ranks.
Yeah, a little bit, because I was very lucky to have a very big opportunity to shoot my first feature, which was Divertimento, only 2 years after graduating from film school. But yeah, after school, I worked as a cinematographer on a few short films, but I wasn't earning any money from it. So I was also assisting on TV series and features. And it's funny how when I got out of school, I was convinced I was going to be a cinematographer right away. And then I started working and realized this is not how the industry works. And you really have to, well, learn by observing before you can do it yourself. And I made peace with that because I loved being on set so much. And I was like, it's okay, I'm fine being an assistant for 10 or 15 years because I love it so much. And I learned from incredible DPs. And right at the time where I had made peace with it and I was okay with spending 10 years as an assistant, Marie Castille, who hired me as an actress a few years ago, called me and offered me to shoot Divertimento, which was so unexpected. And I was shocked, really. And I knew that she was following what I was doing, because she had me shoot a very short episode of a TV series because she wanted to help me get bigger jobs. And so she offered me to shoot that. And after this experience, she told me, I would really like for you to operate the B camera on the feature that I will do this summer. And for me, it was already huge. And I was like, are you sure? Because I've never done it. I don't know if I can do it. Operating a camera, oh my God. And then a few months later, I was assisting on the feature in the Dominican Republic. And she called me and she said, well, my usual cinematographer, she moved on to directing now. And so she can't do the film. And I had this crazy thought that maybe you could do it. And I remember I had to sit because I was so shocked. And She told me, I'm going to send you the script and you read it and you take your time. And if you feel like it's too big, it's too soon, I understand. No pressure. And it doesn't mean that I won't call you back later. But if you love the story and you're up for it, I trust you and I'm ready to work with you. And this is what like every young cinematographer dreams of hearing from a director. And
Wow.
I read the script and absolutely loved it. And then she sent me who the actors were and all the actors. I admired them so much. But still, I felt like it was too big for me and that I wasn't capable of it. And I was so lucky to be working on an American production because Americans are really like, you have to do it, fake it till you make it. And it doesn't matter if you don't trust yourself, just pretend that you can do it and you'll do it. And I was so far away and it kind of forced me to say yes. So I said yes. And then when I came back to Paris and prep started right away on the feature, I realized that, you know, what have I done and what am I going to do now? Because I can't go back. You know, I said yes, so now I have to go with it. And so I went with it and I'm so happy that, you know, I made it. And I think this gave me the confidence to start working as a cinematographer full time. But without this opportunity and the trust that my casting put in me, I don't think I would have, yeah, I wouldn't have enough trust in myself to do it without her.
Do you know what? This is something I heard again and again from women that I've interviewed who've gone into roles like directing or cinematography or composing or screenwriting. They needed someone to kind of give them that push and give them that opportunity, because it's the old statistic that, you know, men will apply for a job if they meet 60% of the criteria, and women wait until they have 100%, you know? And I feel like sometimes maybe fake it till you make it. The Americans might be onto something with that, you know? So what was that collaboration like with Marie Casilli? Like, you're coming back together. You've obviously worked together a couple of times. She's obviously kept an eye on your career. She has an interest in, hey, this girl's got something, let's help her out. You know, how did that start to happen then on this film?
Well, quite naturally, even if I feel like the relationship between a director and an actor is so different from the relationship between a director and a cinematographer. So I had to relearn how to work with her in a different position, but also because I knew her from before and I knew she trusted me, I knew I didn't really have to prove myself, and that was a very good feeling. And I could be very honest with how I saw the film. And because I know her from before, I knew what I could suggest, like where the boundaries were. Because I feel like sometimes when you work with a new director, you never know how much you can suggest to them. And because because I knew her, it made everything very easy and natural. We were really working very closely together, but she was also giving me a lot of freedom, because she's not a very technical person, so she really trusted me and relied on me on making the technical choices that suited her artistic vision for the film. And then we had some guidelines with about how we saw the film and how we wanted to express what the characters are feeling, where we wanted to start and when we wanted to end. But then she has a very special way of working. She doesn't really rehearse ever.
Interesting.
And she doesn't want to do shot lists.
Wow.
So
Okay.
that was very scary for me. Because I feel like when you don't have a lot of experience, what you're lacking is reactivity and adaptability. And because I didn't know what we were going to shoot, I couldn't really prepare as much as I wanted to. So it was a learning curve. The first few days were really stressful. And then as I understood how she was working and thinking, it went more smoothly.
So hang on, that's amazing to me. How did this then physically work? I mean, did you get to at least scout the locations in advance and sort of, you have, I guess, a mental picture in your mind at that point of what you want to do, but you've still got to be super flexible every day.
Yeah. Well, of course, wow. We scout. And obviously, because it's a film about an orchestra, the musicians had to rehearse. That wouldn't have been possible otherwise. So we had rehearsals, but they were just technicals, like so they get the music right and right. Where they're seated and everything, that was decided. But then on the day, all the little interactions that they have with each other, some of them were scripted and some of them weren't. But when we got on set, so it was a little different when we were doing acting scenes that didn't involve music. And then the actors had obviously more freedom, like where they wanted to go. So we would start every day with the rehearsal and see what the actors wanted to do. And then they went to hair and makeup and costumes and we could light the scene. And then as soon as they come back, we shoot. Like, we don't really have rehearsals. And so sometimes, obviously, you rehearse and it doesn't go as planned. Or you see, like, a light in the frame or a stand. Or I mess up the camera or someone messes up the focus.
Is that me?
I see something that could work better with lighting. And then after shooting that first rehearsal, I'm like, okay, so I'm going to fix this, and we're going to change this. And I hear, moving on. I'm like, what? We've only done one take. And what are you talking about? And she says, I really liked what the actors did. So we're moving on to the next shot. So it was really frustrating sometimes, but also really interesting in how much freedom it gives to the actors that are not afraid of like stepping out of marks. Yeah, I was saying that she wants to shoot rehearsals always. And sometimes you don't get a second take to fix what wasn't working in the rehearsal. So it can be frustrating for lighting because obviously you still have little adjustments to make, and with this way of working you can't really make them, so you have to accept what's not perfect because it's part of the way she works. And it was really hard for me during the shoot, but when I see the result, when I see the film, I understand why she shoots that way. And why she really wants to preserve the spontaneity of these little moments and little interactions. And when we did the orchestra scenes, obviously we had a lot more people on set. We also had two cameras, so we couldn't be as fluid in the way we did things. So we knew where the characters were going to be and the placements of the cameras, but we decided that on the day. So we would listen to the music and then decide, oh, we're going to put one camera here, one camera here. And then it was essentially just trying to grab as much interaction as we could. I was operating one of the cameras, and Fanny Kustunov, who's a great operator, and I'm so grateful that she agreed to work with me, was operating a B camera. And most of the time, we had no idea what we were doing. And often I was having her in frame or she was having me. And we had a lot of footage when we were shooting the orchestra. I think every day it was like 4 or 5 hours of footage because we were shooting so much. Mm-hmm. So editing must have been a nightmare. But then the material that you have is so rich. because a million interactions are going on and you can really understand who every single character is. Even if they're very small in the film, they still have their personality and their little story that's happening within the big story. And I think that makes the film really interesting and dynamic, and
it gives it that
a lot
texture,
has
doesn't
to do
it?
With
That's amazing. Two very quick just technical questions. How long did you have for prep, and how long was the shoot?
Prep was a month and a half, and then the shoot was, well, I mean, for me, because then it started way earlier for the others, but for me it was a month and a half, and the shoot was 7 weeks.
Okay, so not crazy fast, but you've got a lot to get through in that time.
Yeah, well, everyone was saying the schedule is insane, considering that we have so many musicians and very long scenes, like that ending scene that we did. That's a very big open air concert. That was only one day of filming. And the first AD said, from the beginning, I think we need 2 days, but we just didn't have them. So we had to rush everything in one day, and the light was changing so much, so it was really hard to grade.
Well, I wanted to
and
ask
also,
you about that scene. Yeah. I mean, because that is, so it's, without giving too much away, it's a big open air concert in a residential building. So you have this full orchestra, you have people like, you know, hanging out with their apartments, basically watching. That's a lot to take in. That just physically, that is a lot of shooting. And one day, that is genuinely mind-blowing. So how did you do it?
Well, we had a little plan of how we wanted to schedule the day. We have the beginning of the scene where the young conductor arrives. So she's coming from her balcony and then getting down the building and arriving downstairs. So that was shot before the rest of the musicians came in. And then we had a couple of drone shots. And then the rest of the day was just two cameras moving between the musicians and trying to get as much as possible. One of the very tricky thing about the film is also that Marie Castille wanted the music to be live recorded, not re-recorded after. So it was really hard for sound as well, because no matter where we were, they had to had good sound of the musicians. And we had to work really closely together so that they could put their mics in a place that was convenient for them, but that also worked with the freedom that we wanted to have with the camera. So I know that some little things have been re-recorded because we had like difficulties, but otherwise they're really playing. So it was really exhausting for them also to spend an entire day in the summer. It was really hot and they had to play the music really loud and smile. So it was a bit crazy for everyone, but it's a beautiful scene. And we had a lot of unplanned extras as well, because we had some extras and then a lot of people just hearing the music came along and in the scene and joined the scene. And these people that we see at the windows weren't extras. They were just people who happened to be at their windows. And so it was really about grabbing as much footage as we can. And there are also little kids dancing in the scene, and that wasn't planned. So it's like at the border between fiction and documentary.
Yeah.
Sometimes, and also the fact that we had the real conductor, because so the film is about that young conductor and her sister who plays the cello, and these two musicians, they exist in real life, and the two real life musicians were always on set with the two actresses, and so the fact that they were constantly here made it even more true and and beautiful for us to shoot.
I mean, the more you talk about this, it seems in the nicest possible way to have been something of a baptism of fire for your first feature as cinematographer. I mean, this is not a low degree of difficulty. This is a very high degree of difficulty for film number one. So did you come out of this feeling kind of fired up, like, yes, I can handle this now. Come on.
You mean after the film or when I started?
After the film. I think not when you started, but after the film.
Yeah, after the film, I think I felt more confident. But I'm also really grateful, because even if it was a hard film, I also think that it was the perfect first film for me. It felt very personal to be telling the story of a young woman who is fighting to be accepted in an industry that's telling her, you're too young, you can't do it, it's not for women. And she's struggling so much and she succeeds. And I think somehow this was resonating with my own experience. And I think maybe that's part of the reason why Marie Castille chose me, because she knew that maybe I'd be able to express how these sisters are feeling.
Yeah.
Because I felt a little something similar.
Art imitating life.
Yes. And because these two wonderful musicians were with us the whole film, it was also very exciting, and I was so happy and motivated by the fact that I could see them every day and see that when they started, no one wanted to hear about them, and now a movie's made about them. And so it was very inspiring and made me want to keep going and really give 100%, because I believe in this story so much.
And look, from the little I've seen, this is a beautiful looking movie, and you've got the lighting that seems to reflect the characters, reflect the drama that's going on. You know, you've I was feeling tense for her in those early rehearsal scenes. It becomes much warmer when she's with her sister. You know, it just felt like you got it right. I mean, amazing, amazing work. You've obviously gone on to do more work since. Can you tell us a little bit about what you just finished shooting?
Yeah, I finished shooting a short film in the Reunion Island.
Wow.
So it was really exciting, and it's a comedy about a young boy who is friend with the goat, and he is afraid that the goat is going to be killed for a sacrifice, and so he's kidnapping the goat and trying to hide it in various places, but it doesn't really go as planned.
Because it's a goat.
It was so unexpected how this project came to me. And I'm so grateful that I could travel and discover like a place so far from home and meet the wonderful local crew. And I think it's really why I do this job, because I love to discover different universes and different directors that all have their singular vision that I can try to be a part of. So I'm really excited about this one as well.
Very quickly, how was it working with a goat?
Little tricky.
A little difficult.
But actually the goat was really calm, and what was the hardest was working with children, because we had five children under the age of 10. And they were sometimes exhausted, and we also had to accommodate how they felt, so sometimes change scenes if we felt like they were too tired to do that very emotional one. It was a film where I had to adapt a lot as well, but I think Divertimento was a great lesson, and I learned a lot, and now I feel more confident taking on projects with a lot of things to adapt and imagine on the day. And I think it's also really exciting when you have to wait and see what the actors are doing and then react based off of that. And I think because I acted before, that's why I'm so excited about scenes where it's very instinctive and I have to let my gut drive me, and when I operate handheld and I'm just so invested physically in a scene, it almost feels like acting. And I think, yeah, I have a similar, there's a similar feeling between acting and operating.
Yeah. Well, it's almost a, it's adding to character, isn't it? Everything that you do as a cinematographer is also adding to the character and to the mood and the motivations of the film. That's amazing. Well, listen, thank you so much, Naomi, and best of luck. I hope there are many more goats in your future.
Thank you.